You know what I'm saying? Guys, you know what I'm saying. You know what I'm saying, you guys. Oh, dude, it has to reload. Dang it. No need to remind me, guys. No need to remind me. Here we go. All right. Coming up soon is Brian O'Shea. This will be an episode of Call Me Ignorant in a couple of dias. That is days in Spanish, by the way. Looking forward to talking to the guy. Going to talk about weapons. Going to talk about... Oh, I got to get rid of this, too. Nope. I got to get rid of... What is this? I don't know what this is. Okay. What is Play Us Out? Brian O'Shea coming in the house pretty soon. Just got to make sure everything goes well. Dang it. No. This is hysterical. Going to talk guns, private investigation, private detective. Excuse me, guys. Let's get him on in here. All right.
Can you hear me?
Hey, Brian. How's it going, man? Welcome to the show.
Good. How are you doing? Good to finally meet you.
Yeah, good to meet you as well. We were just killing a little bit of time watching some of the videos you sent me, you know, throwing knives, things like that.
Watching mine?
Yeah, just a few of them. Yeah, we watched the one from you at the range and the one where you were with Naomi Wolf, you know, showing what after a count had been suspended and things like that. But, you know, so I guess we're going to talk about weapons. We're going to talk about self-defense, you know, your private detective work, things like that. But first question is, how long does it take to learn how to throw knives with accuracy?
Maybe 2 hours.
2 hours. Okay. So explain what that's like.
Well, I call it the COVID bucket list. Like, there was so much downtime, and I was fortunate. I have a client that was paying me anyways. I was working, but it had gone to all research. And so I work about 6 hours a day, and then it's, you know, we have a place up in the Hudson Valley, so it's a lot of woods. And I just, you know, all those things you think about when you're a kid, you know. I don't know if how old you are, but I know when I was a kid, like, ninja magazines were, like, the big thing, and G.I. Joe comic books. And I always wanted to throw a knife, mainly because when people hear the story of how me and Naomi met, because I was technically investigating and doing bodyguard work for her.
Interesting.
They always ask me, like, I bet you're like Kevin Costner. And I was like, nah, I can't even throw a knife. But so I had to learn that really, really quickly.
Wow. Yeah, this is crazy. Well, I never knew that story of how you met. So you were like, you were her bodyguard?
I mean, not so much that. It's there's actually, they did a New York Times wedding announcement, and I'll send you the link. And she had hired me to investigate threats against her when she was doing her reporting, and you know, people that, you know, were threatening to really cancel her. And so she hired me to look into it, and I took care of it. It was very easy to figure out. And thwart. And I just made the online stalker fall in love with someone else.
Really? So this is like literally, like the bodyguard. Okay. So I'm, you know, you can't see it, but I'm showing people the New York Times article right now. Yeah. Naomi Wolf and Brian William O'Shea were married, November 23rd. Wow. That is amazing, man.
It's a crazy story. Yeah. It sounds implausible.
Right. You think they'll make a movie out of it one day?
I don't know, man.
Yeah, you know, I'm just kind of kidding around.
These days, I don't know. I it might offend someone. Who knows?
Yeah, absolutely.
So.
Yeah, I was actually talking with this about a guest we had on Monday, is that it seems like I kind of stopped watching movies and watching TV and reading fiction because it seems like the current story, like the nonfiction story that's going on, if you can call it that, is one of the most fascinating stories, like with the historical lead up to 2020, the different players in the world stage and things like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Do you consume much fiction and stuff, or do you think the nonfiction stuff is enough?
Movies or books?
Yeah, I guess a little bit of both.
I'm mainly nonfiction. I used to be fiction. Actually, I'm more fiction now because the nonfiction, I'm pretty sure, is propagandistic fiction.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's hard to tell the difference between fiction and nonfiction these days. So if I find something that's like, you know, two people get stranded on Mars and it crashes to Earth and they're fighting garbage bots or something like that, then that's what I'm going to watch, because I know that's fake and I don't have to sit there and do some mental gymnastics trying to figure out the propaganda.
Right. Yeah. And that's a good point. Yeah. If it's really outlandish, the sci-fi, the fantasy, things like that. Yeah. You can just escape. But if it's kind of, if it's anything like real life, you know, it's propaganda, especially from big Hollywood. You know, it's crazy. Yeah.
So it is crazy. Yeah.
So when did you start being, so I've been saying you're a private investigator in announcements and stuff. I looked at your profile. It says private detective. Is there a difference between the two things?
No, I started using private detective because I was spending a lot of time in Oxford when Naomi's finished her last book. And, you know, here, anyone who knows private investigations, they know, okay, it's a private investigator. They're either really good or really not that good or somewhere in between. A lot of them are retired cops. I've never been a cop. But I started using detective because it seemed to resonate more with the British audience.
Huh.
You know, probably because of Sherlock Holmes.
Yes, yeah.
And plus, I feel that, and it's interchangeable, and it's legally interchangeable, I mean, except on contracts. But what I found was, even here in the States, when I use investigator, people thought I was part of the police. Mm. And it got really confusing explaining to people, no, it's not a public service. No, I'm not going to look into that just because you're curious about your neighbor. So I started using detective, and it seemed to kind of clear all that up.
Okay. Gotcha. Is there any, you know, it's all, you know, we're going to get a little bit into kind of like libertarian stuff a little bit later, but you know, it's interesting that you were never a cop. I mean, that makes sense. Most libertarians are not really into cops. But what, you know, did you ever consider it? Did you ever want to be, you know, in the public field?
Nope.
No,
I never did. I mean, I was in the military.
Okay.
So I don't know if that counts, but yes, active duty for 11 years. But and I have a lot of really good friends that are not really good friends, but I've known a lot of great cops. I got pulled over recently in Wyoming, and I got a ticket, but the guy was super nice. You know? And so I've never had an issue with police, but I've never wanted to be one. And I think the reason why is probably the same reason I got out of the military and after that, I went into government contracting. I got out of that. And that's because what I do is very creative, coming up with solutions. And what I find with anything that's mandated by a state authority or a national authority, there's parameters you have to work with them. And you don't have a lot of wiggle room. And so with my job, I still have parameters. I have what's legal. But beyond that, I can figure out any way to solve someone's problem I want. If it's going to court, of course, I have to record everything I'm doing, you know, to protect myself. But I just find it's, you know, I was able to let that creative detective out of the cage better by dismissing all authority above me except for, you know, the national and state authority.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's really so. You're kind of describing the bureaucracy. You know, the you know, if you or like you're being told to do by something because there's a chain of command. There's you have to, you know, file paperwork and things like that in the public sphere.
Yeah, and if I may, I've hired a couple ex-police in the past, and even an FBI agent who just retired, and I was excited. I'm thinking, man, this is gonna be great. And they were on time. They could do really good surveillance, but they weren't getting it done. And I said, well, why didn't you just do this? They said, well, that, I don't know if that's legal. And I said, well, I know it's not illegal. Huh. So, you know, if you spend all that time in a career, you're going to be locked into certain frameworks. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's a place for that. And I'm certainly not knocking those people, but it just doesn't fit into what I need to do. Because people normally come to me after they've exhausted all resources. I can't even look at a case if there's open police investigation.
Oh.
So, yeah, that'd be interfering with an ongoing investigation. Sure. So I can't even touch a case anyways. But people normally do come to me when, you know, they've exhausted all other resources.
Wow. Okay, so what branch of the military did you serve in?
In the U.S. Army.
The Army, okay. Did you, when you were active duty, did you, you know, I guess what I'm asking is, when did you decide you wanted to get into this field? Was it like something that you were kind of toying with when you were active duty? Like, when did you start that path of trying to trying to be an investigator?
I kind of stumbled into it. In the military, I was military intelligence and mainly most of my time with Special Forces units, so I was attached as an intelligence guy. And what that means is I was in the unit, but I wasn't a Green Beret. I just had a rucksack with twice as much weight and none of the glory. And so, literally. So when I got out, I went into different fields of government contracting because of my, I did have a clearance. And it was right after 9/11. I walked into so many jobs. It was like being a rock star. And while I was in that, though, you know, it's just like in life, you think, you know, this is going to be great. And then you get there, you're like, ah, it's not so great. Then you think this is going to be great. You get there and that it's not what you want. And just one day I ended up on this contract that was like 7 days on, 7 days off, which was horrible. But in the 7 days off, I think I was watching some detective movie and I was like, man, that'd be really cool. Like break that sucker out at a wedding, you know, say you're a private detective. So I went and got it. And then I got mad because the instructor said I had to work for someone to use it. I thought you just get your license and, you know, you're like the Hardy Boys and you go find things. And so I was like, what do you mean? So, and then I put out some applications just for part-time work. And I cleared it with my government client at the time. And people wanted to pay me like $15 an hour and stuff. I'm like, no, I'm not going to do that. And so I just made my own business just to prove that instructor wrong. And then someone gave me a job and I'm sitting out there in the fresh air with my camera and my coffee. And I'm like, this is so much better than that cubicle in Northern Virginia. I'm just loving this. Wow. So yeah, that's how I got into it. Yeah.
Okay. So, just back to the, you know, your work in the Army, what was the extra gear that, you know, you said you had twice the amount of gear and none of the glory. What was the gear that you had to like carry around and, like, yeah, what are you talking about there?
Well, I won't go into detail, but yeah. It was gear to collect the intelligence I needed to collect.
Okay.
Plus, there's also you have to carry enough water for like 5 days, ammunition for about 5 days. I mean, all that stuff's heavy. But then we had special equipment to do our job, and it was extremely heavy. Probably wouldn't be as heavy today. But it was heavy back then. I mean, our GPS, and this I got out in 2003, so I'm not a total dinosaur, but I mean, our GPS, we used to use these things called pluggers, and they were these giant, like, about the size of a large trail camera, and they had this big fat antenna, so that takes up, you know, when you go camping or on a long road trip, every little inch counts, you know, you're like, do I need this? So you got good at it, but the toughest was jumping with that type of a load because we were an airborne unit. And that was pretty wild. So jumping out of a plane with it is about 120, 130 pounds on average.
Yeah. That's a lot of gear. If you think about squatting or deadlifting or something like that, I mean, you know, it's, you're in a controlled environment, you know, you have a bar and stuff like that, but like, you know, the pack that did you ever, how many, when you were jumping, did you ever get, you know, like whacked by it? Like, did you land on it the wrong way and like hurt yourself or something like that?
No, I mean, I got whacked by the side of the plane a few times, but, not like whack. You kind of go under, like the plane is going, you jump out and your body actually goes like on its back and then kind of slips under the plane. But if people didn't jump out far enough, you'd actually hear their helmets going, dun, 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 you know, down that belly of the plane. Wow. So,
yeah.
No, but what happens is you put it on the front and there's these hooks and you hang it in the front. And then there's, I don't understand the whole, how it works, but then there's a rip cord. So when you get treetop level, which is usually 100 feet, you pull that rip cord and it falls to the end of like a 20 meter or 20 foot. Tether line. And so it's going to land where you're not. And then when you get down there, then you kind of, you know, stay undercover and you pull your rucksack to you.
That's fascinating.
But it was just getting out. It's like because it wraps around the back of your legs. You kind of do this duck waddle. You can't really, and it's heavy. I mean, you've got this thing in front of you and it's just kind of pulling you out of the plane.
Wow. I'm fascinated by that stuff, like logistics and just how to make it physically work. And
I mean, it's fun. I haven't even talked about an worn off in probably 15 years, so thanks for asking.
Yeah, sure, it's a good memory. I love this stuff. Yeah. Would you okay, so we have a live chat going right now, and people have questions about your private detective work. But one of them is regarding like the paperwork you needed. So when you kind of transitioned from contract work to your own business as a PI, and you had to get a certification. Like, do you have to get a college degree for this stuff at all? Like, what's the actual? This is the same thing you meant when you have to work for someone, and then you started your own business. How does the paperwork thing work? You know, that whole
process. Well, that's a great question. In the United States, anyways, it depends on which state you're in. So every state has their own deal going on. So typically a state, if people are interested, they're going to want it. I mean, you can just Google it, like how to get a private investigator's license in Virginia or something like that.
Right.
But like in our case, my licensing authority is the Department of Criminal Justice, and we fall under private security services. And then under that, there's all sorts of, like, private investigator and all that. And then you just have to take usually a course that's mandated, and to make sure you know the laws and the rules. It's not going to teach you how to be an investigator. It's going to teach you how much trouble you can get in when you screw up. That seems to be the whole gist of it. And then you pay fees like anything, and then you get a license.
Yeah.
It's not that difficult. Okay. And some states don't even have a licensing requirement. So if you're in those states, I think maybe Alabama, I don't want to quote it because I'll get it wrong, but there are states that have no licensing requirement. And then after that, it's really, you know, it's kind of like Catch Me If You Can, that movie there. Like, mm-hmm. I have plenty of training, plenty of tactical experience, both from the military and from my government contracting work. But domestic surveillance is a whole different animal. And I really had no idea. And the first thing I tuned into, and I certainly wasn't a fan of it, I couldn't stand the show, but the only show I could find that was doing surveillance was that Bounty Hunter show. I forgot that guy's name.
Dog the Bounty Hunter?
Yeah, you know, and and I hesitate saying that because of all the controversy around him, but that's just really the reality. It's the only show I could find where they were doing somewhat domestic surveillance. It didn't really help. It just, you know, it's one of those things where you just have to do it all the time. And I tell people, like, don't spy on people to get training, but, you know, it's like I always have a camera with me. I always am taking pictures. If you look at my feed of birds, bunnies, bears, you know, sometimes I never put cases up there, but just knowing your equipment so you can break it out and know what works for you is the key thing. And, you know, in terms of surveillance, what I always tell people, actually, let me back up. I've learned more from investigative journalists about being an investigator than really anyone else, because it's the same exact job if you think about it.
Right. Okay.
So.
So what other gear do you usually, you have your camera. I mean, one person, I think they were kind of saying this tongue in cheek, but they asked if you travel around with a magnifying glass. I'm sure that's kind of a joke, but what other gear do you have?
Well, don't laugh, but I actually bought my first magnifying glass not too long ago.
Wow.
And the reason why is because when you're looking at a photo on a computer, it's a lot quicker just to hold a magnifying glass up to it than expand it and try to depixelate it. Sometimes you just want to see something. So I bought that, but I always forget to bring it. But as far as what kind of equipment, I mean, camera first and foremost. You know, so this is my baby here.
Yeah.
And this is the Nikon Coolpix P1000. This has 125 optical zoom. And I'm going to point it out the window. So I am in Iowa City right now. Mm-hmm. So you see, these are other buildings. I don't know. Oh, wait. I don't know if you can see
I can. Yeah, I can see it. Yeah. Not so well, but yeah.
I'm going to point at the corner of the building here because I don't want to peek in anyone's windows. But
right.
All right, so there's the corner of the building. And then this thing can really get right up there. And it's hard because I'm doing this backwards. But you see, that's the corner of that building there. And then if I zoom out.
Okay.
See that?
Wow. Yeah, I saw that. Sure.
Yeah, and it really can do a lot. So dang. If you've seen my pictures of the moon online, they were shot with this.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. So it's important to get, I like these auto cameras. I've had people show up with all the lenses and all the really cool gear, and that's great, but you got to carry that stuff. With this, I put it on Birdwatch, and like it'll take 60 pics or like 50 some odd per second. And it's kind of like if you've ever done skeet shooting, it's kind of like similar to action photography. Like if someone's in a car getting in a car, I'm just going to cover them with frames. I'm just going to hold this down and go full automatic on getting those pictures. And then you can sift through them when you're done and get the best ones for the client.
Wow. So yeah, it's knowing your gear. Yeah. I mean, what do you think it was like, you know, 100 years ago when the technology wasn't there? What adjustments do you think they had to make?
Well, I think it was a lot of trust. I've read not too much. I mean, there's not a lot of history of Detective Burke, but really, if I think of it, there's a biography of Alan Pinkerton. And you could call Alan Pinkerton, and you've heard of Pinkerton Security. Yep. So you could probably call Alan Pinkerton the father of modern PI, because that's what he was at first. It wasn't always security, and which is funny because he came from Scotland and was a socialist. And he moved over to the middle of the country, so I think Minnesota, but don't quote me on that. And someone had their barrels stolen and asked him if he'd help them find them. And he ended up uncovering this big money, a counterfeit money scandal. And he went on to solve more things. Eventually he got the attention of the, I think it was the National Railroad line or whatever, but and Abe Lincoln at the time was, I think the COO or the CFO. And they hired him, and that's, yeah. And then he became the intelligence for the Civil War. And so after that, he's the reason we have licensing, because after the Civil War, the government realized like the private security sector has more guns, they have more people, they have better intelligence networks. We need to license them so we can keep track of them. And that's really what the license is about.
Yeah. Yeah, that's yeah. I'm not a big fan of any type of occupational licensing. I mean, I used to be a pretty hardcore libertarian. I'm kind of more call myself like a right winger now, but still, I still want to end the Fed. I want to end the drug war, like stuff like that. But I'm not a big fan of, especially stuff with guns. I mean, like you said, they just want to keep tabs on the people that are kind of more skilled or better equipped than them, right?
Well, I think that's the roots of it. I think that's a tough one because I own guns and I'm trained and I know I'm going to get a ton of shit for this, but I do believe that there should be some minimum, say, training something because my brother, he sold his business. He got really, really got a lot of money and he's a great guy, but I'll never forget. Sorry, I'm in a hotel room. I'm trying to keep this thing from falling. And I'll never forget, I go to his house and he made, north of $10 million on this deal. And he had all these guns. He never really shot many guns. And it's like, check out, and he had some nice weapons. And I'm like, why do you need all these? And you can tell when you see a gun, you can tell it's never been fired, and I'm looking at it and he's kind of waving it around. I just left the room. I'm like, you're scaring me. I'm going to get shot down here. So my thing is, it's like, just like a driver's license, in my opinion, except for unless you have an adult with you and you're a kid, and just like a driver's license, someone has to take you out and teach you how to drive. You have a little permit thing. And just like with responsible, and I would say the mature, except for him, I'd say every gun owner I've ever met and hung out with has been super responsible. It's always safety first, myself included. To be fair, I mean, I've gone to the range, mainly on the East Coast, if I go to an indoor range, and there's people muzzle flashing you, and you're just kind of like, come on, man. And so there are some people that, really, in my opinion, everyone has a right to own a gun, but everyone has a right to drive too, but you can't just go out and drive. So that's my opinion on it. I know I'm going to get like tons of crap for that, but
that's okay. You know,
but I also think that even if you don't agree with gun ownership, you should always agree with keeping the Second Amendment intact, because my fear, and most, a lot of Second Amendment, you know, protect people that believe in the Constitution. Everyone should, but you start picking one apart, they're going to pick them all apart, and then we're not America anymore. So that's another thing.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, you've been in a PI for what, 15, 16 years? You said you got out in
2012, I believe.
Oh, okay, all right. So about 9 years. Do you what's the? I don't know. It's kind of a big question, because I'm sure that every situation's different, and you know,
what's the day to day?
Yeah, what's the day to day? And also, someone asked in the chat, like, how much of your job is spent online versus in real life? Like, how much is, like, you know, sitting at a desk looking at photos versus actually staking out? And I don't even know what the right terms are. But yeah, what's the day to day? And, like, you know, and maybe you could describe. I know you can't, like, reveal as much information as I want. I mean, no, as an interview, I want all the info. But, you know, just what's your day to day, all that stuff.
I just can't tell you client names and stuff. But, well, okay, so like a typical job is, let's say a company calls you, someone's stealing, like, you know, equipment, and they want you to solve it. Okay, and so you'll probably, the way it works is I sell hours. So people purchase a minimum amount of hours. So it'll be like 20 hours. And I don't guarantee, you know, results, because you wouldn't need me if you knew what the result would be. But I do guarantee that I will get you as much as I can in those 20 hours of surveillance. And then you don't charge normally for writing up the report. So to answer the question, if I do 20 hours of surveillance, I mean, you're looking probably at about another 10 to 20 hours of writing. It just depends on how much you write. So the most important thing in this job is writing, more than anything, because you're out there, you're doing the fun. And look, being in the field's fun. I love it. And I don't always love the writing part. It's like, you know, pace in front of the laptop. I'm like, God. And then you have a lot of photos you got to go through. So, but my thing is, like, if you can't write and communicate, what happened? Well, how does the client know what happened? Because only you are out there. So the better you write, the more success you're going to have, and the more pictures you take. Like, nothing could happen. It's not your fault. If they say, I want you out there on Saturday and Sunday, and these guys just decide to not show up and steal things, well, that's not your fault, you know. Right. But you want to show that you were there. You want to try to give them some additional information. Hey, no, nothing happened, but I did notice that there was a Tennessee license plate on the ground, and I took a picture of it. I mean, you want to go outside the box and get them as much as they can. So you're the eyes and ears on a place or a target where they can't be. And the only way to communicate that is with how your report looks.
I see. Okay. And what about, you know, pulling records of theirs and stuff online, like investments or like I don't know what you have access to. I mean, I guess you have access to whatever the public has access to, but, you know, someone asked you, can you find someone's investments, or can you find like fraud receipts or like, you know, old police reports, things like that?
So each one of those things is different. So in terms of like credit related stuff, you can, but you're not legally allowed to. So you do need to, go through a credit bureau for that. Or typically the target or the subject would have to sign a release for you to look at their credit info. That's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So you can't look at that stuff. What you can look at, though, is everything around that. And I call that silhouetting. So if I can't look at someone's bank records, but we think they have $1 million, that they didn't have yesterday, I'm going to follow them and watch your spending. And I'm going to see what kind of improvements are happening at their house, or has their car upgraded. The same way police catch bank robbers most of the time is they never catch them in the act. They catch them in the act of buying a bunch of things.
Yeah.
So I'm going to try to build a story around that, but then, you know, it still might be up to a lawyer or something to figure it out, or the police to figure out the rest of this. I'm going to get them down the road, but that's not, that's more of a preponderance of evidence type of collection. The second one was
investments.
Same thing. It depends on the investments.
Yeah.
So if it's a physical asset type investment, land, houses, of course, that's easy. Yep. Houses are really easy because they're publicly available. Investments themselves, no. I mean, good luck with that because a lot of those won't even show up on a credit report. Then, so no, and that's one of those things where normally you, if you're at that level of investigation, you're normally working with a lawyer.
Oh, okay.
And if you're getting into this work or you're new to it and a lawyer says, hey, can you find this? No, you can't. And even if you could, you're like a hacker or something, you don't want to because it's a federal offense if you access that stuff and worse if you turn it over. So you don't want to do that. But that's when you'd ask your lawyer or the lawyer they've assigned to work with you, hey, you need to get a forensic accountant or you need to put this in discovery and have them turn these things over. So you want to know a lot about the law around the type of case you're doing. That's a key thing is knowing what you're legally allowed to do and knowing the law so you can help the lawyer or the legal team. A lot of times they don't know.
Wow. That's fascinating stuff. Yeah. I mean, do you, the other thing I talked about was police reports. Is that public record? Like, I mean, I guess that's kind of interesting. You have to kind of know who the person is and their name before you go. Cause if it's just like you said, someone is stealing something, they don't know who's stealing. They don't know if they're stealing, just stuff is just missing,
right.
But it's just like a random guy that you see, you got to figure out their identity before you go into, you know, pulling records online or anything like that. Like,
sure.
Yeah. So how do you, let's get into the legal angle actually. Like is just taking photos of someone legal or following them?
Yeah, it's
or?
Totally legal.
Okay.
Totally legal. There's a lot of cases about this, but now there's a caveat here. So like I'm on the seventh floor of a hotel. Mm-hmm. I can see in people's windows because they're open. It looks like an office across from me. I can't take those pictures, even though I can. That'd be an invasion of privacy because I could not possibly see that from the street, from the ground level, from the public area. So it's about expectation of privacy. So if someone's on a ground level apartment, and someone else, I think there was a case about this. Sorry about that. You still there?
Yeah, we're good. Yeah.
I had my do not disturb, but someone still got a call through. And I think there was a case like I don't want to say TMZ, but it was one of those type of outfits had taken pictures of someone from a public area of them engaged in a carnal act, for lack of a better term. And I think there was a court case about it, but the photographer was able to, did not get in trouble because if you're on the ground level and it's, you know, it's location based too. Every place has different laws and case law, but because they had their windows wide open and anyone on the street could see what was going in there, there's no expectation of privacy. And so the reason you can take pictures of anyone is because in a public area, and you have to be in a public area, like you can't trespass and take pictures. Drones, that's a whole nother story. Like that's up in the air a lot of times, but yeah. There's laws around that too. But so that's a key thing. Be in a public area. If they're in a public area, it's just like the GPS argument. Like, can you put a GPS on someone's car? It goes back and forth. It depends on who's hearing the case, I guess, but it's been argued that that is no different than putting a flyer on someone's windshield wiper.
Wow. Where do you,
where do you go in public? Where you go in public, there's no expectation of privacy.
So where do you stand on the GPS thing? I mean, maybe for professional reasons, you like that. It's allowed. But like, where do you stand on the moral aspect of the GPS thing?
I mean, I don't use GPS. I think it's lazy. And it's also expensive. Like, there's no – like, those subscriptions, you can never get out of them. You know, and so, you know, the only time I've used GPS was just, I put it on my own vehicle to see how well it worked. And just the logistics of getting it on is going to be dangerous. I don't see how you're not trespassing if you get a GPS on someone's car. I just like to stay away from it because you should be able to, with some practice, you know, do surveillance in a legal way without having, and GPS is not illegal, but I find it to be, you're kind of leaving behind a trace that you were there. Yeah. So if you don't get the thing off, or you can put that thing on and they go to get their oil changed, but your case is blown.
Sure.
Yeah. So I don't use GPS. It's, you know, when surveillance is done, it's like, you know, just, plus surveillance is just going to get you more information because the GPS is going to show you where they went. But if they stop for 3 hours and you're not watching them, you don't know what they were. They could have been unloading a truck full of like gold bullion or something. So you just don't know.
Yeah. Okay.
So yeah, I'm not a fan of GPS. I don't use it.
Okay. So what about, have you ever been, you know, like sued or, you know, actually like kind of flirted with the line of doing something or gotten caught for like doing something illegal, like gotten in trouble for lack of a better word for, yeah.
Doing your taxes. I mean, I've never done anything illegal. Yeah. There's always going to be complaints.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say. Like, yeah. I mean, a person can sue or can threaten to sue or complain or something like that, regardless of what you did. They can make something up. They can like exaggerate. They can muddy the facts. Does that happen?
Yeah. Okay. Give me just a second. I think with client, there are some clients that will complain and say you didn't do what they paid you for. And that's why you have contracts. And you say, well, I did, and it's right here and you signed it. And that will normally go to a review board if they want to push it. And as long as you keep your paperwork tight and you stay within your regulations and do everything by the book in terms of contracting and all that and maintaining your records, you know, you don't want to be a cowboy out there. It's just not a good idea. There was a case in the 80s called, I think it was Blue Moon Investigations, where they were reporting to the client where the husband was in real time. And she came and killed him.
What?
Yeah, it was a famous case, and I remember as a kid being horrified by this news footage, and she's like running him over with her car over and over. I mean, and so I learned about that case when I was actually getting my license, and criminally, they were not liable, but they got sued. I mean, they got sued bad by that family. And, you know, that's another point. You don't want to keep the client informed in real time ever. I've had clients show up in camouflage wanting to help, and I didn't tell them anything, but like I had my guys were out there and they're like, hey boss, there's someone in camouflage crawling through the parking lot.
Wow.
And I was like, what? Hold on. So I call the client and I'm back at the office. I call the client, and you know, to her credit, she was like 79 years old and just wanted to be part of it, and she went out of fucking camouflage. And this is like, you know, this is an upper middle class woman. And I said, watch her closely. So I call, and they're like, yeah, it looks like she's answering the phones. I knew it was her. I said, what are you doing? And she's like, just trying to help. But I said, I'm sure you'd be a great help, but you need to low crawl out of there, and you're going to blow the whole case. So that's why, in a more humorous reason, you don't keep people informed in real time.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, I guess that's another reason that, you know, I don't know if people account for this themselves, but it'd be a really good reason to hire a detective is because, you know, you're distanced from the emotions of it. I mean, they're dealing with either their property or their loved ones, you know, very personal stuff. And they, you know, that's a great story, man.
Yeah. Oh, there's tons of them. I mean, I could go on and on. Someday I'll write a book, I keep telling myself, yeah. But that's a full-time job in and of itself.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
do you have we probably won't get all the stories, but do you struggle to remember all the stuff? It's so much. I mean, I'm a music teacher. I you know, there's been crazy stuff that's happened in a music class, but I don't remember it all because it's the day. It's almost like working in a hospital, or you know, it's just like the day to day. But like, do you like have a journal or anything like that?
You know, just old reports for clients. Really, I keep every photo though, and I have terabytes of video and photography and audio, and I just I keep all those. And sometimes I'll take pictures with my iPhone just to make sure I've got a backup. That's another good point. Backup cameras, redundancy all the time. I never go on a job without any less than 5 cameras.
Wow.
But when I'm going through my phone, you know, we all take pictures of everything. I'll go through my phone and there's my cute dog, Mushroom. And then, oh yeah, I remember that case. And so it comes back to me through the photos. Mm. And I do want to someday do a music video, like to either People Are Strange or Season of the Witch, you know, just kind of do this whole like collage type montage thing. So, yeah.
Are you, whose property are those photos and videos, like your property?
No, technically they are the property of the client. Mm. And so what I'll do when I keep them is, and by keeping them, what I really mean is like the case specific photos, those go, you know, anything that's identifying and licensed with those go. The client has those. I get rid of those after 2 years. Okay. I destroy them. But in taking as many pictures as you can, sometimes you're bored. I mean, sometimes you're always bored doing surveillance until something happens. Yeah. And make no mistake about it. Like, don't get into this job if you think you're going to do a low crawl and a tumble and have a ghillie suit and the action's going to happen. I mean, you might be sitting there for 2 days before you get a shot. And so you get bored. Sometimes you'll see a nice sunset or, you know, a cool car or, you know, something like that, or someone. So you're just taking random photos, you know, and it's just to pass the time. So really those kind of photos, but I recognize the location from them. And I'm like, oh yeah, I remember that case. That was a pretty wild case.
Mm, cool. Yeah. So it's like jogs the memory. Yeah. Do you, you ever had like the cops called on you for like,
yes.
Yeah. A lot. Okay. So you got like your car, you have like tinted windows and stuff and you know, your detective mobile.
Depends on the neighborhood.
Oh yeah.
So like if I'm, you know, if I'm in a neighborhood where everyone's driving a Prius, I'm renting a Prius. Mm. If I'm in, you know, if I'm in like, rural Washington or Texas, I'm renting a Dodge Ram 1500 white extended cab because everyone seems to have those. Mm-hmm. I'm going to try to blend in as much as I can, but when I'm doing, and I don't really do all these different jobs now because I have one client and I do all the work for them. And that's been for the last 2 years. So, and which involves everything. It's a perfect situation. But the thing about the vehicle is, and that's why I was talking about cameras, dash cams are great. Mm. Like dash cams are great. Having multiple dash cams where especially if you're alone, man, it's hard. Like you're going to miss something. And I normally do mostly video because you're less likely to miss something. But I literally will have a 2-channel dash cam and then 2 GoPros pointing out the side and they're running nonstop. And so I'm covered there. And I even have a tripod for this that has a automatic, it's called a cam ranger. And it just rotates and oscillates. And it's like click, click, click all day long. Mm. So I have tons of whatever I can do to automate the process. And then I myself, I'll have a pen camera. I'll have my iPhone in my pocket, which is always the best. And, you know, I'm just trying to record as I have a camera in the back of my hat when I go on a job. So when I'm leaving, if something's happening behind me, I capture that as well. I'm capturing everything.
Yeah, this is really cool. I didn't even think about this till right now. I keep this thing right here just because it's a smiley face. I think it looks funny, but this is actually a camera right here.
There's I've seen those.
Yeah. There's one in the eye right there. And so I've covered.
Did you get that from Breakout Security?
I don't know. It was just at a store called Micro Center that does like all things electronics. Yeah. So I don't know what like brand it is, but when I've covered like protests and live events and things like that, I'll clip it on my backpack so it can get the stuff behind me. I got a pen one. Yeah. Just all kinds of stuff.
Yep. Yeah. And they're really easy to get. Like you could go on to Amazon and And you know, this is where, like, you know, I'll say, like, without going into China stuff, like, there's a lot of good products that come out of China. I'm never a decoupler or anything like that. I want a fair market. But they have, these things are so cheap now. You could get everything, like, and they're getting smaller and smaller. Like, you have fire extinguisher. I mean, they've thought that I'm at the point now where I'm customizing. And here's a little, I'll share this industry secret with you. I'm into RC cars in a big way. I started using that for a job. That's a different story, but that's how I got into it. But what I found is these FPV cameras are great. Like, those things can transmit. So wow. The ones they put on, like, fixed-wing planes,
yeah,
you can just stick that on a tray and then transmit. And it's cheaper because when these industries sell to, like, you know, if you see it, if you look up private investigation equipment, it's going to lead you to places that are really overpriced because it's a target market. But if you go to, you know, I was just messing around, like, it'd be really cool to have first person view on my awesome Traxxas car. And I started thinking that, I was like, well, how far can this transmit? And then I was thinking, hey, and then go to Michael's and get some styrofoam and carve out a fake rock or something. You know, just, you've got to be creative.
Have you seen, like, other, you know, mask cams? Like, people wear masks all the time. Well, they're starting to less and less, but
have you seen them now?
I'm asking you, like, have you ever seen any surveillance, like, COVID-related or, like, inside of, like, one of these masks?
No, I haven't. You know, I was thinking, like, eventually someone's going to come up with a mask camera or something.
Yeah,
Well, and the thing about, like, I'm totally anti-mask, mm-hmm. you know, I think it's an idiotic notion, you know, but I will say the only benefit I've gotten from masking was I didn't have to use disguises.
Yeah.
Because everyone's masked.
Me too.
The only problem with masking is everybody's masked.
Yep.
So it's hard to see who's who. But a mask cam, I was thinking like mask cam, but you can stick a camera in anything.
Anything, yeah. So
I tested one out on my son's baseball hat, and I have a picture of that on Twitter. And I got hell for that. People were like, you're using your kid for an operation. I'm like, no, it's just, you know, it's just showing out. You know, it's cool. And people lost their minds, so.
The same thing kind of happened to me, like with your point about everyone's, it's a kind of double, I'm completely anti-mask too, but when I've, you know, like I said, I'm a right winger, and I've gone to, you know, Black Lives Matter protests before. And this is really the only time that I've worn a mask, and like on purpose really is because like, it's kind of a comedy show. So I'm always like cracking inappropriate jokes and stuff, and I'm laughing. So I'm looking at my live chat and I'm wearing a bandana, and I've actually been called out pretty hard by the mob for laughing, like no smiling, no laughing at these protests. So from there, I just wore a bandana and, making your occasional, you know, racist joke, like, you know, a little bit easier to pull off. But yeah. So do you ever befriend, like, how close do you get to the targets on these jobs? Like, can you befriend them? Do you ever, like, are you ever like there? I don't know. their oil change. You mentioned, like, do you ever like dress up as a person in their life where you're like the mailman or anything like that?
No, I mean, it's not, you know, I've seen people do that. But it's, by and large, no. I mean, that was the big thing, you know? So, I mean, I've never really, because there's no need to get that close. I mean, that's why I have such big cameras. It's like, you want to get as far away as you can, because you don't know how long you're going to be doing a job. And, you might, you know, you might have to do the job for a few years. You don't want to blow it, because once you interact with someone, they're going to remember you.
Oh, and yeah, you said you're sometimes doing it for years.
Sometimes.
Wow. Yeah. That's patience, man. Do you dress like, you brought up cars earlier. Do you ever like, do you dress to fit the part in the neighbor? I mean, you're not going to be wearing like a nice suit in the ghetto or anything like that. Like, how's the outfit?
Within the profession, you always want to blend into your environment. But just like in the military, I mean, you wear camouflage to blend. And it's frustrating where I've actually had PIs assigned to me from like an opposing party.
Really?
Which was funny because,
wow.
I the first time it happened, I was thinking, this can't possibly be happening. And the guy literally was looking over a newspaper at Starbucks, like in the movies. And he made eye contact. And then I'm like, okay. And so knowing the way the business works, I'm like, someone's paying this person. It's probably the party that I'm opposed to in this litigation. And I just drove around for hours. I even went to Medieval Times, and I wasn't on the client's time. I was on my own time. So I went to Medieval Times for the matinee, and I watched the Black Knight beat the Green Knight. And that guy had to go in there with his little paper crown and stare at me for 2 hours. And then I drove out to the shore and I stared at the ocean for like 4 hours. I had an audio book in my ear. He didn't know that. And then I forgot. Then I think I went shopping at like Joanne Fabrics, which is like probably the most boring place I could think of.
Yeah.
And this guy had to follow me through all that. And what I was doing too is I was taking him through environments where he'd really stick out to make sure I was being followed, like Medieval Times. I mean, when I look back and I see that guy in his windbreaker and his khakis and the green and gold crown, and he's eating forced to eat like Cornish gay men with his fingers. I was trying so hard not to laugh. I mean, it's just so funny.
What was how did it resolve itself? Did you ever like it confront him, or you just kept doing your own thing until it went away?
Well, it resolved itself when I realized he had a GPS on my car.
Mm.
And so I left the lights on and I see him down the street waiting for me to go to bed. So I just put one of those automatic like sockets that turn your lights on randomly. So I had like a few lights in the house just popping on and off. And I was watching him and he was like walking, then he'd back up. Then another light would pop on, he'd have to back up. And he finally just gave up.
Oh, okay.
And so then I went outside and I took the GPS off my car, and it was garbage day the next day. So I put it in the garbage.
Mm-hmm.
And I followed him following that garbage truck through like five neighborhoods.
Okay.
Trying to figure out where I was because he's watching this GPS thing and he couldn't figure it out.
This is a fascinating field, man. Wow. Okay. So we're out of time in about 10 minutes, but my next question was going to be, like, you seem pretty good at your job. Would you say, I mean, like, I can't believe that you're not above average at your job. Like, how many PIs there are? Like, do you consider yourself like pretty good at it? This guy that you're describing sounds pretty, pretty bad at his job. But like, wow, what's the field out there like?
It depends on the industry.
Yeah.
So I would say for your domestic type work, it's hit and miss. There's really, really good PIs. There's really bad ones. Usually when I'm working at the level I'm working now, there's some pretty good people on the opposing party and everything. I really feel, based on my experience and my success, and I base that success on clients hiring me and my reputation and court cases that may have been successful. I think I'm definitely one of the best. Mm. And that sounds cocky, whatever, but I measure that by my dedication to the client. Mm. Like, even if I run out of money from them, I'm going to finish their job. If they paid a lot of money and I see they're going broke on this case, I'm going to put in those extra, I always put in extra hours anyways. I just don't charge them because I really like solving cases. And if someone's really been wronged, I really want them to have some, at a minimum, some transparency on it. You know, maybe nothing happened. I want to be able to show them that. I don't want them to go to someone who's going to rip them off. And I can't solve every case. Not every case is solvable, but I think what makes me good, what I feel makes me good, is really my dedication to giving that client some sense of peace and some transparency, and so they can move on with their lives and then focus on other things.
Yeah.
So that's where I rate it.
Yeah, it's very honorable. Yeah, like pride in your work, dedication, and follow through. These are definitely marks of someone that's good at their field. Yeah, and it's definitely nice. Like, I used to think when I was younger that I was kind of like that it was cocky. But it's like Michael Jordan was cocky, but he also knew he was one of the best. You can be both cocky and know you're the best at the same time, or you can know you're one of the best and not be cocky. And it's just the simple truth is the simple truth. I personally think I'm one of the best private music teachers in the world. I haven't gotten noticed yet, but.
I've heard that. Your reputation precedes you. So.
So do you, what about anyone that ever faked their own death? Like, you know, people trying to disappear from society, like they just want to get, you know, anything like that?
Not on any case I've done, but I do got a great, really quick story for you.
Okay, great.
Kind of like that.
Love it.
We did have a case where this poor woman was convinced that her husband was cheating on her. Every Tuesday he would go to, like, the Motel 6. And my guys out there was like, hey, I can't figure out. He goes in there. He comes out 4 hours later. I don't see anyone going with him or leave. So we finally sent a pizza over there.
Huh.
And knocked on the door afterwards and said, hey, yeah, my pizza, my guy go in. And he's in there for like an hour and he comes out and he's eating a piece of pizza. And I said, well, what happened? Well, it turns out the guy really liked hockey. And his wife didn't want him to watch hockey because he'd had a heart attack. And this is like a CEO of a major like company too. And so he would sneak off for the playoffs or something and go to a Motel 6 and wear his little college sweatshirt, like old school, like the elastic bands. And he'd get his little like pizza or like, a Hungry Man. That was his favorite. We found out the little burnt brownie in the little sections.
Yep.
And he would just sit there and watch hockey in a place where she wasn't yelling at him. And
wow.
We reported. So unfortunately, we had to report that to her. I didn't want to, you know, betray his love of hockey. But yeah, you know, she's the client, and she needed that transparency. And she was mad at us. She didn't believe us.
Wow.
And at that point, there she tried to give us more money. I said, I think I'm going to give you a list of some really good marriage counselors. And you know,
this
maybe
is sad.
That's,
it's kind of a sad story, man.
It's a sad story, yeah. But the guy was so happy to watch his hockey, and he invited my friend in. He's like, you want to watch some? My friend's like, that's a little weird, but it's like, oh no, leave the door open. So my friend, I said, well, next time don't get a slice of pizza, but you know,
wow.
At least we gave her some, and I think they're doing fine now. They actually did go to a marriage counselor. She followed up and they're doing great.
So, yeah. Someone in the live chat just said, dude just wanted to watch the game.
Dude just wanted to watch the game.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. Did you ever, you know, that when people think of your, you know, your standard private investigator or whatever, they, you know, you mentioned it earlier, kind of like the domestic thing. Were you ever involved? Did you have to work your way up or anything like that? Is that considered to be like bottom of the barrel? Like if you start off at that, you work your way up, or like, did you ever have that as your assignment? Like, you know, or like where it actually turned out to be what was going on?
Well, I think it's what people prefer as detectives. So some people prefer just doing all domestic. Some people prefer doing insurance cases.
Yeah.
Mine is usually based on the client. I either like the client or I don't. So if I like my current client's wonderful and I've been with them forever, and I wouldn't be with them this long if we didn't have a mutual dedication to solving their problems. So for me, it's more client based.
Okay.
I want to help anyone. And you know, as long as I can, I will, you know, there's a lot of things that go into that, but so for me, it's more about, you know, I prefer clients. They have a multitude of issues and I can help them solve a lot of them and let them focus on what they need to do, whatever their profession is. So I don't think that's really an echelon thing of like some, the lower level does this and the higher level. I mean, there's people that do process serving and nothing but serving papers and are insanely good at it and make a lot of money doing that. So I think it's really what you prefer.
Yeah. This just came to mind. We covered this on the show yesterday. There's this case of a politician. He was getting served by another politician's process server. I think it was Eric Swalwell was doing the serving, and it was Mo Brooks. But the process server ran in his garage to serve his wife. Essentially, there's like a scandal from a couple days ago. Is that okay? Like, is the garage the property? You know, like, is that a violation?
It depends on the state.
Oh, that's tough, yeah.
Every state has something called the rules of civil process. Mm. And so it really depends on that state's rules. I don't know. I don't know where that happened.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it was in, I don't want to butcher it. Yeah. You know, so this is kind of last kind of light question. I mean, one of the people in the chat is familiar with a PI. I don't want to give away too much information, but, do you ever have to pee in a bottle like when you're on a stakeout, like, or do you just leave, or how do you handle the essentials or the life sustaining essentials when you're, you know, when you're out?
I'm going to give you a standard media training answer. Every case is different, and you need to adjust accordingly to make it through every case.
Yes. Okay. Good. That's very. It's very. I don't know. PC or professional of you. That's the word I'm looking for. All right. Great. All right. Sweet, man. Well, I mean, yeah, we just did an hour. That's usually like kind of the standard length. But you know, just real quick. We usually do like a what's called a rapid fire round at the end of the interview, where I'm gonna ask you quick stuff, and you get people in the live chat, feel free to put stuff in the chat that is maybe not so related to private investigation, maybe stuff that's favorite food, stuff like that. So do you have first one's from me, do you have a favorite gun, a thing that you like to shoot the most, like what's your favorite firearm that you shoot?
My favorite firearm is actually my CO2 pistol.
Really? Explain. Yeah.
Because I can take it out and practice most of the fundamentals without getting in trouble.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. It's interesting. Yeah. I just did a class called Extreme Close Quarters Combat. And so it was like kind of firing at, 3 to 5 feet, really, 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 really close. And they were just emphasizing that just even doing just dry fire every single day, just drawing stuff like that, it can help you. And also with the ammo shortage, it's just like, it's an arm and a leg for the money, right?
Yeah. And definitely. And it is, I mean, you're doing your trigger squeeze, you're doing your sight picture, you're doing your breathing. You can see my, some friends and family on my site doing, on my Twitter doing, some CO2. And, so I would say that one, just because, I would say my favorite firearm is, definitely my Glock, and it's just an all around great gun. It's good distribution of recoil. It's comfortable. It's what I know. It's a nice gun.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna ask next. What's your like everyday carry? Okay, so Glock.
I don't everyday carry.
Oh, wow, that's very surprising.
You have to be licensed, and in my profession, for instance, you have to have a special licensing, and the insurance is through the roof. And look, I mean, I'm collecting intelligence or domestic information. If I need a gun, then I've done something really wrong.
Mm. Yeah. Okay. Do you have a? Do you throw hatchets?
I throw hatchets. That's a trick question. It's on my Twitter. Yes, I bought some hatchets from. Actually, I was sent some hatchets by Smith & Wesson, and there are these things like this, and they're great. It's like meditation. I love it.
To be fair, that actually was I did know that, but to be fair, that wasn't my question. That was from the live chat, so they didn't know. So you do throw out. Do you have what's your favorite spy movie? Favorite spy movie, and what maybe most realistic one as well?
I'm not going to answer the second one. I don't want to confirm or deny a thing.
I get it.
I will say my favorite one, I can't think of the name of it, but my favorite spy movie is Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy.
Oh, cool.
That is, that is definitely my favorite spy movie. As far as like CIA related movies, the one that had Robert Redford and Brad Pitt was, I thought, exceptional.
What was that one?
I forgot the name of it.
I know. I've seen it. And I can picture it, but I don't remember it. Okay.
Yeah.
What's your favorite food? What's your favorite food? And we'll go with, when you're eating at a restaurant as well as cooking at home.
Chinese food.
Okay.
Cooking at home, steak.
Steak. Yeah, that's cool. I've never seen Spy Kids before. So someone asked how accurate is Spy Kids? Do you know that movie?
Yeah, I think it's about as accurate as the Santa Claus when they had spy elves. I don't know. I don't know any Spy Kids, so I can't really comment. And yeah. I certainly mean no disrespect to any existing Spy Kids that are out there.
That is great. All right. That was an awesome interview. You guys, I know it was a joke, might be wrong. Sorry. My live chat's messing with me now. That was a great interview. You're welcome back on anytime. I love talking about this field. Yeah, it was great, man. I'll definitely be snooping in over there on Twitter and things like that. But this is going to be a podcast in a couple days. So why don't you just tell people like how to find you, how to support online, anything you want to promote or plug or anything like that?
Sure. The best way to find me is just on Twitter is just Ryan O'Shea, S-P-I. And my Instagram is the same. And then I would also say in light of, everything else, I'm always checking in on dailyclout.io as well, just to see what's going on with legislation and everything.
Wow, I've never heard of that. That's, I'm going to look at that right now. Dailyclout.io. I've never even heard of that. That's a great information source for me.
Oh, I have to disclose it's my wife's site.
Oh, it's your wife's site? Okay, yes. That's fine. That's fine. You can plug whatever.
She keeps me out of trouble.
Okay, great. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on. I'd love to have you on again and have a great day, okay?
You too. Thanks a lot. Right. Have a good
one. Take care, Brian.
Thanks.
Bye. All right. Cool. That was fun, guys. Oh, that was hey, I call people out on the second interview. Katie Z says great interview except for not calling him out on the gun stuff. You know what, I dropped the ball. No, but I mean, the second time around I get more contentious. If you see my repeat interviews and things like that, I do call them out, but I like making my guest comfortable and things like that. Brian O'Shea, private detective, not investigator, husband of Naomi Wolf. Awesome interview. That was really fun. Good guy.